Hey guys, Jace here. Obviously, Bad Idea has only released one book so far, and we do have some interviews coming up with some of the creators, but we want to release those closer to the times the books actually are hitting stores. So, you know, with not a lot of content out there, it's sort of tough to put out a Bad Idea episode every Sunday, but I'm still committed to doing that. And so I thought, well, maybe it'd be a good idea to go back and revisit the conversation I had with Hunter, Dinesh, and Warren back in 2020, when they're talking about all the titles that had been released at that time. Hunter even shows some artwork. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll be able to see all of the graphics. If you're just listening to it in audio form, we kind of describe, and there's not a lot of actual preview art at that time, but it's a good idea. If you're not familiar with Bad Idea, you're going to learn about it here. I'm going to talk a lot about what it's all about, and obviously encourage you to go back and listen to last week's episode, where I talked to Warren and Dinesh, and they sort of addressed a lot of the rumors that have been going around. So I hope you enjoy this Bad Idea flashback, and hopefully we'll have something brand new for you next week. I know we're going to have Robert Venditti on to talk about the first issue of Tankers once that hits. So not sure what I'm going to do next week yet, but hoping to have something new for you then. So as always, thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoy the episode, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, everybody, special treat for you today. I have a lot of the executive staff or the new publisher, Bad Idea, joining me. And we're going to learn a little bit about Bad Idea. If you're not familiar with who they are, it's a new publisher about to make a big splash in the comic book industry. And they just recently announced the rundown of their first wave of titles. So we'll go title by title. We'll talk about the creative teams for each one and give you an idea of what those titles are all about. So let's have everybody introduce themselves and let us know what you do with Bad Idea. We'll start with you, Dinesh.
Sure. I'm Dinesh Amsani. I'm the co-CEO, co-CCO of Bad Idea.
I thought it was co-CEO.
No, but Warren's the co-CEO.
Or is it, actually, now that you say it out loud, I always thought it was pronounced CEO. It's the individual letters. You don't just pronounce the word.
CEO. I'm like a half CEO, not half CCO, but not like two halves make one. I'm only half of each at any given time.
Got it. That doesn't have anything to do with your height, right?
Has everything to do with my height. It's horrible. Get me out of, Chase, get me out of here.
All right, sorry. I couldn't resist. How about you, Hunter? What do you do?
My name is Hunter Goranson, or Hunter Hardball Goranson, as Warren sometimes calls me. And I am the publisher
of that. Ooh.
And I do want to point out, you know, Hunter's one of us, because if you look in the background, what do you see but Longbox?
Goddamn,
like,
right.
You know, I have over here, so yeah, showing his mad skills. Josh, why don't you jump in?
Yeah, Josh Johns, director of marketing. Bad Idea.
And last but certainly not least, Warren.
I'm Warren Simons. I'm the co-CEO and CCO. As Dinesh aptly noted, there is a head of the table, and Dinesh sits at the head of the table, and then there's a foot of the table, and I sit at the foot of the table. So he's the head on the foot. That's how that works.
I made a joke one time, Jace, in a meeting, got a big laugh, and ever since then, Warren has been stealing this joke and taking credit for it publicly. Very proud of this joke.
Not taking credit for anything. Is that your joke, Rob? Is that yours?
So what I'm hearing is Dinesh is the daddy, and Warren is the mommy, and all the kids sit in the middle, right?
Everyone would disagree with that, certainly.
Josh is reconsidering all of his life decisions up until this point.
I saw time and space during that segment. I said, look through it.
Josh, from now on, I want you to call me daddy.
Who is your daddy? Please. What does he do?
Chase, you're not in charge of HR.
Add it to my list of titles.
You know, we're missing one of the Bad Idea crew here, Jace. Mm-hmm. He makes a special appearance, but maybe not. That's Adam Freeman.
Oh, Adam, right. Tom. Right.
ATOM with an exclamation mark and the shiny shoes.
Yes. And Adam
Free Comics.
Yes, Adam.
You guys know him from that old ditty.
Yeah, and he's been around the block, for those not familiar, Adam. He used to being an actual retailer, so he knows the front lines, and along with a lot of this crew worked over at Valiant and resurrected that publisher. So that kind of leads me into my next question, Dinesh. You obviously left Valiant, and then what? You had opportunity to do other things. I know you guys have Hive Mind, where you work with producing TV and movies. But what was the lure to come back and start something on your own in what's, to be honest, a pretty crowded industry with comics? It was just in your blood and something you had to do? Like, give us a kind of a play-by-play of how you came up with the idea, as bad as it is, and how you got to where you are now.
We all have a version of that story. Who wants to go first?
Warren, how about you, big dog?
So all of us worked together at Valiant. We worked together somewhat well. We resurrected a company that had been dormant for about a decade, as you know, Jace, as you know from hanging out with us at San Diego every year. And I, in 2018, the company was sold. And after that, I think that all of us, at least I can only speak for myself, we looked around. I said I thought it was a good run and moved on to, took a little bit of time off. Editing, I'm an editor by nature. Even though my title is co-CEO, CCO at this point in time, essentially I'm doing the same thing I've been doing for a long time now. And that works in dog years. So for every year you're an editor, it actually ages you 7 years. So I've been doing this for about 140 years at this point in time. And
Warren's 26 years old. In case you guys
26 years old. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to tell. That's why I wear the Knicks hat, because it keeps me young. But so for me, it was a good point to take a little bit of a break and catch my breath for a little bit. So you know, a little bit further down the road, we all began to talk. You know, a couple of years later, about getting the band back together and doing something new. And you know, we love the Valiant characters. We love the Valiant universe. We have an extraordinary affinity for those characters. I was able to work at Marvel before that for a long period of time. So I've been doing editing comics for about, you know, 15, 20 years at this particular point in time. So this is in my blood. It's in my nature. It's something that I love doing. And we're excited about the prospect of building Bad Idea and you know, continuing to work together. We're like a big family that likes to fight and argue with each other, and we're like iron on iron. We find that, at least I find that, we make good comics and we build books together and we market them well. And, you know, we take the job seriously.
Yeah. There's, we're going to get into this a little bit later. There's one aspect of Bad Idea that I really want to stress with everybody who's watching or listening that I think really shows the passion for the medium. And it's something totally different from something anybody else is doing. Being that you have so much creative freedom, and your creators are basically given carte blanche to tell the story they want to tell. Is it different? You've been doing it for so long. Does this feel different than anything you've ever done before in terms of from the editing perspective?
In some ways, it's different because we're not revitalizing a dormant universe. We don't have to rebuild Exo and Bloodshot and Harbinger and Archon Armstrong and all those characters and redesign them and all that stuff. It's all whole cloth and new. But you know, I look at the faces on the Zoom, and you know, it seems like yesterday Josh and I were in my office going through Exo-1 and ironing out the lettering and building the next thing, where Dinesh and I were going over costume designs for Exo or Bloodshot and trying to get back to the designers, or Hunter and I were, you know, talking about what assets are in and building what's next. So, you know, it's all very new. You know, the slate that we announced yesterday, I really love it. And I really love the different genres that we have. And I really love that we have a horror book and we have a kids book and we have a sci-fi book, and we're spanning everything. So in some regards, it's not just old hat, but by the same token, you know, we're going through a lot of the same processes with the guys, a lot of the same interactions and sort of ways that we're building things are very similar. But also, I think that, you know, not to pat ourselves on the shoulder, respect the football, we're here at day one, and this is the start of something new, and all the work is ahead of us. But I think that all of us really demand a high level of quality. So I think that's something that all of us are used to. And, you know, we're not hacking it out. We're not happy that we sold Valiant. We're moving on to the next thing. And this will sort of be a quieter thing. We're really leaning into it and trying to build the best thing possible. Okay, cool. I'm done talking on this podcast now. You guys, that was
what I would add to what Warren said, Jace, is like, I'm not sure. Back in the formative days of Valiant 2012, you know, we were fortunate, as we've said oftentimes, to be standing on the shoulders of giants, right? Dinesh and his partners at the time had rounded up, you know, just a, had rounded up the opportunity, secured the opportunity to relaunch like one of the greatest brands in comics, right? That had fallen by the wayside, so that had passionate fans like yourself that were out there. And we inherited that legacy, but really we were just like five or six guys in a room. You know, I had never worked professionally in comics full-time before. Warren obviously had a very long career at Marvel that preceded this. Dinesh was 12 years old when he started this.
15. Just got his braces off. They looked great.
Yeah. Me and Josh were interns at Marvel together. That was our previous expertise in the industry. So, you know, we tried to project out to the world that, you know, Valiant was in good hands and that we were all A-class professionals. Nothing was farther from the truth. We learned on the job, right? But we had these great tools to build off of. What feels different for me now is that, like, it's 10 years later. All of us have our 10,000 hours. We've all learned a lot about our different respective disciplines in comics, except Warren, who was always a master storyteller from the jump.
Let me get my wallet.
Now that we've seen the industry from a lot of different sides, it's given us the opportunity to really sit down and think about what are the rules we can break, what are the new things we can build. And I think what most importantly, what are the things that we always wanted to do that we couldn't do at Valiant, because Valiant was already a, you know, we had the freedom to rebuild it in a lot of ways, but it also came with a lot of baked in assumptions about what it could be and what it should be. And, you know, and we're unshackled from those now to a large degree.
That's the most fun thing about what we're doing now, man. And to your first question, why would we not come back? We're blessed to be able to do this. Making comics is fucking fun. Making movies sucks. A lot of work. It's right. a lot of people compromising. This stuff is, you get to build stuff the way that it's best serving the story. And we all know what we're doing now. We don't have a mountain to climb in that we have nothing to prove. We all have a lot to prove at Valiant. And we had the baggage of Valiant, which was also a benefit, but was baggage. You know, there was a sitting to Valiant. Here we can break shit. It's awesome. And we did that with the Hero Trade. We're doing that with the lineup. I mean, just wait till we announce all the other stuff we got planned. All this horrible, horrible stuff to shake things up. It's fun.
Yeah, not to, you know, throw water on this at all, but there has been a little bit of pushback, or there was when it was when you guys were first announced, because you're doing a direct to retailer model, right? There's no digital, there's no trades, there's no, oh, I don't want to pick up single issues because I'm going to wait for the trade. You guys are trying to bring the collectability back to the medium. You're doing something where, hey, let's get that surprise back. You know, it's so hard to have that nowadays with social media and everybody's connected, and you know 2 months ahead of time what the book is, who the artist is, everything. There's no, let me walk into my comic shop or to my local convenience store and look at the spinner rack and be surprised by what's there. And I know you guys are trying to recapture some of that magic. So maybe you can answer this, Josh. How's it been with people kind of learning what your model is? Are people starting to catch on to the idea of what you guys are trying to do and getting excited about it?
I think there's a lot of excitement, but I think fundamentally at its core, not just guys who love comics, but as Hunter said, I believe you were on a call earlier, we are guys that like love comic book stores. And like all of us grew up as hardcore, go in on Wednesday, pull box guys. And I think that we want to bring the bad idea, some of that magic back to the days before you knew what previews mag was. Like I was interning at Marvel before I realized what the solicitation cycle was, right? Because like, it was a delight for me to go show up at this shop and see a comic that, though I was anticipating that comic's release date, I didn't know everything about the cover. I hadn't read the three-paragraph description that more or less spoiled everything. There was a sense of joy and wonder to that. And though our model now, was untraditional, and even since the time that we made that model, it's become more traditional than it was when we first said those words, because how much the industry has shaken up. I think at its core, we're just trying to bring that joy of going to a comic book store and getting a comic book and discovering something that you can own and collect and discuss with your peers. And I think that's why people have connected with this model and haven't put, though, you know, have asked a lot of questions. And some people, of course, there is some pushback. Ultimately, I think we'll be celebrated for it because it's about comic book shops first.
Right. I think it's 100 retailers that you're partnered up with so far that are going to be carrying the line, but that's going to continue.
We have announced.
I'm sorry?
100 that we have announced.
Right. I'm sure there are more coming down the line, and that number is going to continue to grow once people see the actual books. I mean, it's not like you're going to limit it. And I think you've heard you say this before, Dinesh. Anybody who really wants the book is going to be able to find it. I know that's where some of the pushback comes. People are worried they're not going to be able to get them. But, I mean, there are plenty of these partners that do mail order and things like that. So you're confident that people that want to read these are going to be able to get them, right?
At first, look, like anything, they will, if you wait 6 months, they're probably going to go into collections and they'll be gone. But, yeah, at first, I think that if you pre-order, that's the best way to do it. If you get in touch with the store and mail order, if you go to your store, they should have copies the first week or so, first couple weeks, maybe even the first month. We're not going to make it hard. We want people to read the books. But we also like, because we don't have Wolverine, we don't have Batman, we also like people stressing a little bit. Because otherwise they take us for granted. I'll pick that up when I see it in the store. You don't go to the store that week, or it's sold out, or you forgot about it. And then we suffer, and then the line never grows. And we're not able to tell these great stories. We saw that firsthand at Valiant, man. It was a slog pushing Valiant up that hill.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, you originally had planned on launching in 2020, right, Hunter? And then obviously we all know the global pandemic and, you know, really put kind of the kibosh on the industry. And we've seen changes with DC and Diamond and other things. And I've talked about it on my show several times. I think in the long run, it's possibly going to be good for the industry. We all know Diamond's monopoly isn't the most healthy thing. So talk a little bit about what changes you've had to make. Obviously, things have been pushed back to 2021, but you know, announcements, excitement, things are coming. So how have you adjusted on the fly, and what is the plan going forward?
Well, what I would say is, I mean, we were all gung-ho. Pandemic, no pandemic, we were going to publish comics, and then this motherfucker, the button, turned up on our doorstep one day and just said, click me, click me, click me. As you know, we needed to get 1 billion clicks. We spent a lot of time trying to take them down from the inside. Spent a lot of time, for some of us, Adam, who I'll never forgive, because he couldn't see the beauty of the gift that the button was trying to give to us. I've learned a lot about myself on the journey to 1 billion clicks, and I think I'm a better man for it, honestly. But that's the reason that we had to push, was 1 billion clicks. Finally, we're there. But as you can see, we spent the better part of, you know, it was great in a lot of ways. It was good timing for us because, you know, we didn't get one or two books out there beforehand. We were able to take that time that's, you know, everybody's been grappling with over the past, you know, 6 months or so, and really like not just double down, but kind of triple down on what we were already working on. So Warren has been up to his eyeballs on a bunch of projects. I mean, we announced 5 yesterday, including ENIAC, which you guys already knew about. But there's a ton of stuff behind that that's already very far into various stages of production. So we've got a lot of people, creators, writers, artists who were, working very, very, very far ahead on several Bad Idea projects concurrently. So it gave us a lot of time to refine what we're doing, and we're glad to finally be able to share just a teeny tiny taste of the first 5 books that'll be hitting in March of next year.
That's not to say anything about buttoned up comics. Don't forget, there's a whole bunch of books that could be built over there. We don't know what the fuck the button's been doing this whole time.
Wow.
Be careful.
Be careful. So there could be some surprises that you guys might not even know about coming down the line.
No one was more surprised by the hero trade than me.
Hunter, hold that, hold that button up again. See that? See what's happening there?
Oh.
He's like Jimmy Fallon. I'm like the Roots. I'm like the Roots to his Jimmy Fallon.
Yep. This is like this is merely one facet of the button's multifold existence.
So we've hit 1 billion clicks, but it seems like the button's not going away. Button will live forever.
Strange.
I'm still clicking it just out of habit. I find it to be soothing. I watched the debate last night, and I just clicked the button the entire time.
Did you? Come on. Did you really?
While you're watching TV, while you're in the bathtub. Yep. Just clicking the button.
By the way, how come Josh and Warren, how come you guys don't have fancy smancy names? Can they see these names, Jace? Where's your name?
My name? You should be able to see mine.
Hunter McTankers. I like that. It's five books. It's five of us. I feel like everyone's got to come up with a pun.
Dineshiak. I think Hunter did that first, and then I think you had. I was wondering if I missed the chain. I do think you changed it to be cool like Hunter, and now I have to be cool like you, leaving Warren out.
Yeah, I didn't do anything. I've changed my name to Hunter McTankers, Josh.
Legally.
Yep.
Well, I actually want to talk about tankers, which just seems like a wild idea. But let's start with the title that everybody kind of knew about already, which was ENIAC, written by Matt Kent. From the preview pages I've seen from Doug Braithwaite, the art is absolutely spectacular. And it seems like a really great hard science tale that Matt Kent is perfect for telling. But before we get to that, I did mention before when I asked Warren if this felt different, something Matt said in an interview he gave over at Sci-Fi, which was that the story dictates all. And I know you guys have all, from your days at Valiant, it's always been, you know, best idea wins, best story idea is what's going to dictate. One of the things that Bad Idea is doing that I think is the most important thing to stress to everybody is in terms of how long the stories are, in terms of page count or issue. It's not 22 pages dictated by the fact that it's 22 pages. The books and the issues are going to be as long as they need to be to tell the story. So the story is really all. The story dictates. So if it turns out it's 800 pages and that's divided among X amount of issues, then that's how many it's going to be. If you need, you know, 560 page issues, you have 560 page issues. But the price is always $3.99. So to me, that's the most important thing, because it shows the idea of the story is what matters the most. And we're going to tell the story in the best way that it needs to be told, rather than, okay, the story needs 40 pages, but we've only got 22 pages to tell it at $3.99. So we're going to have to cut something. That's not what you're doing at all. And I think it's one of the most important things to let everybody know. It's always $3.99, but the story is going to be as long as the story needs to be. So what went into that thinking that hey, this is the decision that we need to make?
Certainly no business acumen.
Well,
Warren, I mean, it's something we did, it something that Warren lobbied for hard at Valiant, like many times over the years. Like, go ahead, my friend.
It's something similar to what Dinesh just said about movies and TV and film and comics, in that, you know, just fewer people touching the thing along the way, I think, is helpful, especially in a medium which is where things can derail so quickly, so easily. So when you have one of the great joys of comics that makes it fun is that, you know, Matt could come up with a story and, you know, I'll read it and we'll discuss it internally, but there's not 45 people or 20 people reading the thing or looking at the thing or trying to get their ideas into the thing. So I think in that capacity, it's critical to the success of the thing. You know, too many chefs, as you know, Jace, spoil the soup, as it were. Everyone wants to throw a little bit of salt in or vegetable that doesn't belong or something along those lines. Next thing you know, you kind of have this Frankenstein on the shelves, and you can see that across the board in our industry all over the place. You know, whether it's too much continuity where the book's inaccessible to a new reader, which I think is certainly a plague in our industry right now, where if you haven't been reading the book for 25 or 30 years, you have no idea what's going on. The first time Spider-Man fought Doc Ock, that's an interesting story. The 35th time where they're referencing the 34th time, and you're paying $3.99 for 20 pages of a comic that you have to have been reading the story for 2 years to even fathom what's happening. I think it's a real problem. And you know, so from a story standpoint, as you noted, that's the North Star for us always. That's the thing that we drill down on. We aim to understand and secure before we even begin scripting process. Before we line up the artist, just trying to understand what that is in that capacity. And then if the story, you know, I think we've added pages to ENIAC multiple times. If we feel like the story needs something else, or we need to add a section or a page, if something's not clear, if it's compressed, We've done that across the board on multiple books. So for us, it's always about how do we run out of money as fast as possible? That's really the main thing. Just, have you seen Brewster's Millions? We're doing the publishing equivalent of that. So we've got a big trash can, and every day we walk in and just throw money into it and burn it. So we think that's a good idea.
There's really a lot of people doing that, by the way. I'm saving my money.
It's not just more, Jace, also. It's sometimes it's less. Hero Trade was eight pages. Didn't need to be more. It's super effective, we thought, at eight pages. ENIAC, we certainly added pages. We've also deleted a couple pages that were superfluous. We didn't need them. By the way, I love the new name.
Yeah, you like that? Let's do it. Let me give a rundown of the titles, and then maybe Hunter, you can share your screen and show some of the art as we talk cool. about the book. So obviously we have ENIAC that we already mentioned from Matt Kent and Doug Braithwaite. We've got Tankers written by Robert Venditti with Juan Jose Reap on art and Jody Belair handling the colors. Yeah. We've got Walesville, which is an oversized one shot from Matt Kent with line work by Adam Polina and beautiful colors by Matt Hollinsworth. Then we've got The Lot from Marguerite Bennett, who has been on the show several times. I know what a big horror fan she is, so I'm super excited to see this The Lot title, which sounds really great, with Renato Guedes, who, if anybody is a Valiant fan, you're going to be familiar with his work. And then finally, Sleigh Bells from Zeb Wells with David LaFuente and Ulysses Areola, which is the concept of that one just has me, I'm not sure about it, but then when I saw the preview pages and I read the interview with the guys talking about how excited they were, I'm on board for that. But I will say, out of all of them, the one I was most unsure about was Walesville. But then when I read what Matt and Adam had to say about it, it went from the bottom of my list, or near the bottom, it shot up to the top. Now it's the one I'm most wow. excited about. I literally can't wait to read this, because the format of doing telling the entire story in double page spread has me really excited. And the other thing that has me excited, I always love when there's a book and a story that comes out that I can share with my daughter, who's now 9. Yeah. And this sounds like the perfect type of story to share with her, just whimsical and fun and timeless, and not one of those stories that, because I mean, you hear the premise, right? The guy, the kid gets swallowed by a whale. There's a town inside the whale made from driftwood and other detritus that the whale has swallowed. And you think, oh, that's going to be some weird esoteric way out there, what's Matt trying to say thing. But when you read what Matt has to say about it, it's much more the children's story kind of thing, whimsical and fun. And I also found it interesting, and we'll have to talk about this next time I see you in person, Warren, the fact that when you read it, what you took from the story was totally different from what Matt was talking about or thought he was getting at in terms of theme. So I'm really interested in that. So let's go whatever order you want to go in, Hunter. If you want to share your screen and throw some.
Do it chronologically. Let me see.
And then whoever wants to talk about the titles as they are shown, feel free to jump in.
See if this works. Can you see that?
Yep. Yep.
Well, let's see if it opens. Can you see that?
No.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on.
You can see your.
You can just see the folder, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Hold on one second.
Kind of a show you're running here, Jace. Technical difficulties.
Yeah. We're a podcast. We don't do a lot of video, so I'll blame it on that.
I just blame Hunter. My go-to.
So, was it always the plan to have...
do this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you see that?
Yes. Oh, beautiful.
Did a page of ENIAC. Cool.
Was it always the plan to have this be your first... title?
There's a couple of books in contention. We almost went with the book codenamed Megalith, but that felt like just too much awesome, you know. We didn't want to come out there. We want to come out with the right hook, but not one that sends the rest of the industry on its you know, just on its knees. Don't want to cripple the industry by putting out a book just too awesome,
too aggressive a move, you know.
Right, who wants to give a quick elevator pitch? What's ENIAC about?
Dinesh, take it away, baby.
Hunter does it so well, though.
Hunter, take it away, baby.
Take it away?
Take it away.
All right. 1944.
I'm out. Wait, it's a period story? I'm out.
Height of World War II. As we know, the U.S. government had multiple competing initiatives that were designed to try and find any weapon available or asset available to try and end the war. One of those was the Manhattan Project that developed the atomic bomb, ultimately. One was ENIAC. This is all true. This is real history. ENIAC was the world's first supercomputer. It was a product of this an experimental project that ran alongside the Manhattan Project, and it was used to create, calculate lots of useful information, weather patterns that would affect troop deployments, et cetera. Where our story diverges from real life history is that in the world of this book, it is August 1945, the United States has just dropped the first bomb on Hiroshima, and a couple days later, a second bomb falls on Nagasaki. Except, Jace, and here's the real catch, no human being gave the order to do that. The rest of the Allies turn around and say, who the fuck just dropped a second bomb on Japan? And that's when they receive a telegram from ENIAC. ENIAC, in their haste to end the war, the Allies had accidentally created the world's first artificial intelligence, and it quickly ascertained that in order to end the war, a second bomb would be necessary, with or without human approval. So in the world of this book, the past 75 years of global political affairs and international politics has all secretly been an attempt to corral ENIAC. It's been the secret force behind operating behind the shadows for 75 years, the entire way that the Cold War shook out, the reason why the United States was in Vietnam, the war on terror. All of these have been colored or controlled to some extent by ENIAC, to a small degree or a big degree to varying degrees. And now, for the past few years, ENIAC has gone dark. No one knows what's happened to it until the Secretary of Defense has just discovered that there's a secret code running an Earth satellite network. And in 3 days, ENIAC is going to do something. They don't know what, but it has the potential to potentially wipe out humanity. So he has hired two secret operatives who we see here in some of the beginning art to essentially carry out the most important mission in human history, find ENIAC and kill that motherfucker before he can kill us.
based on true events, loosely based on true events.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to think. I love when writers, and Matt is a master at this, Fred Van Lente is another one who does it really well. They pull, you know, events from real human history and you know, embellish them. And you think about what could have been, this could have happened. And I think it adds like a real layer of realism to the story, you know, really gets you thinking about what could happen. Do we know how many issues and how many pages per issue for ENIAC?
We do.
Can you tell us, or is that a secret?
What have we announced so far, Hunter? I know we haven't announced
that. We haven't announced. We had an initial page count on the version of ENIAC that was solicited back in the spring, but we've been back in there tinkering on the books, and I think Matt was talking about it in the same interview that Jace quoted. He went back in and added several more pages to this issue. So it's a behemoth. This is going to be like, you know, this is a dump truck full of comics coming your way. The good stuff. It's going to be a big first issue. I think rightfully so, since it'll be Bad Ideas' first proper official comic too.
But it is a four issue. It's planned to be a four issue story to begin with. And let's see what happens.
Awesome. Well, let's move on to Tankers, written by Robert Venditti. As I mentioned earlier, Juan Jose Reap on the artwork, colors by Jordi Belair. This one, I mean, I'm a big fan of Rob. Venditti's he's a friend. He's an incredible talent. Been on the show a bunch of times. He's going nuts, man. He's pulling out all the stops for this one. So, Josh, why don't you give us an idea of what Tankers is all about?
Oh, I'm glad I got to do this one. I absolutely love this pitch. When Warren sent the first issue my way, I wrote like a personal note to Rob, who I'm buddies with, and was just like, I think this is the greatest thing you've done in your career. I'm just such a gigantic Dinosaurs fan. But let's see if I can not screw it up too badly. In the not too distant future, we are running out of fossil fuels, and Big Oil, Greenleaf, in an attempt to create a future that has many, many, many more years of reserves of fossil fuels, sends back a team of deplorable mercenaries to go and avert the situation that would have killed too many dinosaurs. Along the way, they run afoul of all the dinosaurs in the land, and we get just insane pages of glorious ultra-violence and mech versus dinosaur battles, making it, just in my opinion, already the greatest comic book ever made, Watchmen-esque, I dare say. What I don't understand is that by doing that and fighting these dinosaurs, they will have altered history in a way that might not put man back on top when they return, and they will have to have many more mech and creature and dinosaur battles to come. And my enthusiasm is 100% real. I do think this is the greatest comic book I think I've ever read.
Yeah.
Based on a true story.
So this is the thing that I thought when I first, first I saw Rob's name. I'm like, okay, I mean, I'm all in on all this stuff, but I saw, Rob's name. And then I saw Juan's name, who from the time I first saw his work on Clone, the David Schulmer title from Skyrim, yeah. I've loved his work. And then I saw the pages that I'm just like, oh my God, this is some of his best work he's ever done. But here's the thing that I think about Tankers and why I can't wait to read it. You want to talk about a title that epitomizes the publishing name of Bad Idea, but yet is 100%, you could see an oil company being stupid enough to do this. It's such a bad idea. And yet they do it. They do it. They say, hey, let's make sure the meteor doesn't kill too many dinosaurs so we can keep selling oil, making money, and polluting the earth. Totally, totally could be based in reality if they had the technology to do this.
Josh is right, man. Rob is really killed it with this one. It is, the high concept's wonderful, but he's done such a good job with the characters. It's super emotional, man. There's a moment in issue two where I think people are going to be in tears. Like, he's really, really gone for it here.
Yeah, absolutely spectacular. And we haven't seen the color pages yet, but I can't wait to see what the finished product looks like, because Jordi Belair, as we all know, is one of the best, if not the best, colorist working in the industry.
Oh yeah, we're not done. There's going to be color. There's also going to be letters on the
balloons. Letters. There's going to be actual like words.
Inside little balloons. It's crazy. Yeah.
We're going to include colors and letters all for the price of admission.
Wow, yeah, that is fantastic. Well, who wants to talk about Walesville? I kind of covered it already, but I'm curious.
This is all you, Warren.
Early on when we were planning out what books we're going to develop, what we're going to launch with, Matt came out to L.A. And I zipped up and we were hanging out at Dinesh's apartment. And we were just talking about a bunch of different ideas. And one of the ideas that Matt presented was Walesville, basically. We have another book, which is an all-ages book in development right now with an artist that I won't mention yet, but I have no idea how we've gotten him. I'm so excited for it. This is the story about a little boy who's swallowed by a whale. A common story we've heard many times before, especially if you've gone to church or temple or something along those lines. And when he gets into the body of the whale, we see that there's a little town in there filled with sea creatures, a crab, a seagull, a couple of different sea dragon, a couple of different animals, some fish. And they're inside this little ecosystem, and they don't understand that they're inside the body of a belly of a whale. They think that this is all that reality is. They think that this little boy named Wu-Wei comes in, and he wakes up and realizes where he is, and that they've got to get him out of there, or his father, who's the captain of a whaling ship, will kill the whale and ultimately destroy the town. So it's an all-ages book. Matt's written a wonderful, beautiful little story here. We were really excited about it. Matt was like, really? And I was like, yeah, we love this thing, man. He didn't think we'd pick this, but just a great idea. And Adam is just absolutely annihilated the art. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. He's a real visionary. He's got a real unique style. And Matt Hollinger's on colors, so we're really excited about this one. I've got two kids as well, and I'd like to be able to hand them something that they could read, and I could sit down and read with them. That's not simply violent or has profanity in it or something along those lines. So we're pretty pumped up for this one.
I haven't told you yet, Warren. I've been telling Maya the story to put her down to sleep every night for a couple of weeks. And then the announcement came out yesterday. And I just thought, you know what, I'll pull up my phone. I pulled up the pages and I showed them to Maya. And I was going to tell the story. And she was like, no, Daddy, no, new one. She's done. She's bored. I told her. I said, but Maya, this is based on a true story. Loosely.
I was talking, I told Henry that we announced a bunch of books yesterday at the end of the day. We were hanging out. And he goes, did you announce Tankers? Did you announce Wellsville? I was like, how do you know these names? But he sits at my desk sometimes when he does the school Zooms, and I have the boards over here with all the printouts and covers and stuff. So he's been absorbing that through osmosis. So it was pretty cute.
That's awesome. Well, whatever it was about the idea of Wellsville, you mentioned, and I think Matt mentioned it in the interview he gave for Wellsville, he was surprised that you and Dinesh migrated to this. Now that you've seen the finished product, finished product.
We shouldn't have done it.
Is that how you feel, or do you feel like it lived up to what you saw in that initial idea?
Look at it. It's wonderful, man. It's a heartwarming, innocent story. It's part of a whole line of things we're going to be doing. Warren said we've got another one in development with an artist. We've got two or three more that are right behind it, you know, on the story side. This was part of when Matt pitched to us a number of stories in the same vein that we said, you know what, we want to do all of these in a kind of Pixar, Miyazaki style. That's something we were never able to do at Valiant, and really comics doesn't do that well. A couple of people do it okay. Boom tries to do it a little bit, but it's rare. So we're really excited to be able to do this. And we can only do it here. That's the freedom that, to go back to your first question, why we're all excited about being a bad idea is because we're not bound by the rules. We don't have to build a little empire. We can just build cool stories, one or two a month.
I think you hit the nail right on the head there. Is we all know that comics as a medium, you know, sequential art telling a story, there are no rules, really. There are no bounds by which you can say, okay, it can do this, but it can't do that. But I feel like sometimes, certainly in Western comics, that's forgotten. It has to be superheroes, or it has to be 22 pages, or it doesn't have to be anything. We just need somebody to come along and show us, hey, look what it can be. It can do anything. And so, you know, so many, you talk about who the traditional comic book fan is now, you know, some 40-year-old white guy, you know, I'm the poster child for that. But if we want the industry to survive, we've got to bring in new readers. And the way to do that is to do things differently, because what's being done, what has been done in the last 10 or 15 years is not growing the readership. So I commend you guys for saying story first. Let's try new stuff. Let's try to reach people in a new way, and hopefully it works.
The response we saw at Comics Bro was really, really wonderful as well in the same regard, because I think a lot of people wouldn't touch a book like this as a publisher because it's not necessarily the most obviously commercial thing. Mm-hmm. When we took it to Comics Bro, we were like, look, we're going to try this thing. We have a few of them. Hopefully it's exciting. And they went gaga. I mean, this was maybe the book they were most excited about, the retailers, the stores. They felt like there was an underserved audience that they really wanted to get to with this book.
And one of the great things about it also is, Hunter, can you go to that last page of The Whale? Or one of the pages of The Whale, I should say. Like, look at this border that Adam drew. just even the simplicity of the level of detail that Adam is bringing to bear on this. You know, the line work on the whale, that border, you know, the clouds in the sky. Look at the sun. I mean, there are all these details where you just have, you know, that's one of the really great things about working with people like Matt and Adam and Matt Hollingsworth, our colorist, where everyone is just giving 110% at all points in time. And that's really one of the joys also of limiting the amount of books that we're publishing so that we're not trying to, you know, publish 9, 10, 15 books every month and we have to compromise, who's available. We can really refine this so that we're working with just exceptional talent that's going to put their hearts into the thing. It's not the fourth or the fifth most important book that they're working on that month. It's really just trying to build the best books on the shelves every time out. And we won't always succeed, but even starting out with that goal, that target, I think that's one of the keys to what will hopefully be our success.
Well, I think the way you get the best work out of talented people is to give them the freedom to do what they want to do, tell a story the way they want to tell it, and you're right, not overwork them. So I
I think that's great. Who wants to talk about the Lot, which is the horror title from
Hunter's Turn Again?
Hunter's Turn Again.
Yeah, yeah. I did the first one. Remember, I said it's based on a true story.
Well, this one's based on a true story as well.
Loosely, it is loosely.
All right, 1970. In 1970, a famed auteur director, an obsessive Kubrick type, is shooting his new horror masterpiece. And in order to bring a level of authenticity to the genre that he found to be otherwise lacking, he has the idea to cast some real life Satanists in his new horror film. That, of course, is a bad idea, no pun intended. And they enact a ritual on screen that he filmed for the film. Went horribly wrong. There was a lot of blood in the aftermath, and the footage was confiscated. The soundstage was shut down, and no one, it was essentially covered up and swept away in history. Now it's 50 years later. The film studio is in the hands of a young new studio executive named Aviva Copeland, and she's sizing up the studio's assets when she comes to find that there's a prime piece of real estate that's gone shuttered for the past 50 years. The soundstage where this lost horror masterpiece was shot. So as she begins unraveling the secret of what happened with that film and what may or may not have been released, she'll come to find that there's a good reason that corner of their lot has stayed boarded up for five decades. So it's a super cool kind of Hollywood horror story or a Hollywood haunted house story. It's kind of a reimagining of what a haunted house or haunted place story can be. And Marguerite has put it's written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Renato Gades, who worked with us extensively at Valiant as well. And she has just put a ton of thought into how the story is going to be structured and how what happened 50 years ago ties back to today. It's really, really, really cool. And it's our first foray into horror.
Yeah, this one has me really excited because I know what a huge horror fan Marguerite is. And like I said, she's been on the show before talking about some of her Aftershock titles, Insects and Animosity, and so many people know her from her DC work, on Batwoman or the DC Bombshells, which is so not horror, so cutesy and whatever. But when you talk to Marguerite, what she's passionate about is horror, and so the fact that she's going to be able to have the creative freedom that you guys are offering at Bad Idea to tell the story she wants to tell with as much real estate as she needs, I'm sure she just must be over the moon that, she's got the freedom to go nuts. And I can't wait because I have a feeling that this thing's going to be scary as crap.
She killed it, man. The opening sequence to this book is frightening. It was super hard to do in comics. Absolutely frightening. She I love her other books. I think this is the best thing she's ever written.
And one of the real joys of reading that script, as you mentioned, Jace, was just going through it. And you're like, oh, she has just an encyclopedic knowledge of horror.
Yeah.
Just the reference points that she's bringing out for the artist. It was, 30, 40 years across all different genres of horror and movie posters and creatures. And you're just like, oh, okay, this is fascinating. Not only is the script excellent structurally from a dialogue standpoint, but really the level of knowledge that she has of this particular genre, it was as comprehensive as probably any script I've ever seen from any writer. It was just an exceptional first issue. And Renato is working in a style which is unlike anything we've seen before. The pages he's working on right now are stunning, and they have this wonderful visual to them, very similar to the cover. So I think this one's going to be pretty special.
Great. And then the last title, Sleigh Bells, from Zeb Wells, line work by David LaFuente, and then colors by Ulysses Areola.
This has got to be Warren. Warren's got to talk about this one.
Warren's going to talk about this one. All right.
Got it.
Warren's a big, awesome. Big holiday Christmas fan here.
Well, Zeb and I worked together a little bit when I was at Marvel. He wrote a couple of different books for me. He wrote one called Daredevil Battling Jack Murdock, which is about Daredevil's dad. He wrote a Spidey Doc Ock book, and both of them were really both of them flew under the radar a little bit, but both of them were exceptional. He really wrote the hell out of them. And when I was at Valiant, he was building and show running his own animation show. So he was swamped, and on the off chance that he'd be available, I just shot him a text, and we were talking about the idea that it always made sense to me that at some point in time, some hunter had to accidentally shoot one of Sansa's reindeer. They've got to stop and eat and use the bathroom along the way, and one of them just gets plugged, and it just causes carnage, and I think Sansa would be none too happy with that. So there's a great scene in the book where this little kid takes out his rifle, and his dad's, he doesn't want to go hunting. He just wants to hang out in his house and play video games and hang out on his phone like any 10-year-old. And the dad looks at him, and they see a deer on the ridge or a reindeer on the ridge, and he's like, that's it. And the kid goes, Dad, I thought we shouldn't fire an animal over the ridge. And he goes, there's nothing for 100 miles beyond that ridge. The kid takes aim, and his dad goes, do it. The kid shoots him, and suddenly all of a sudden it's reindeer come barreling over and going into the brush, and it's just an absolute disaster. The father and the son run away, and then we cut to Santa, and he takes out his list, and he's got the boy's name on it, and he crosses out nice. And then we go into town from there, and we sort of have this Rambo-esque Santa going into town, constable, is there a veterinarian on duty, that kind of a thing. And then it sort of descends into Santa taking out this town from there. It's a black comedy. It's Zeb at his wonderful script, and David LaFuente is just one of the true geniuses in our medium. The joy that he's imparted on these pages is fantastic. So this is another one shot, and I'm pretty excited about this one.
Yeah, Dave is the perfect artist for this title. So I'm curious, when Zeb pitched it to you, did David immediately come to mind as the artist to you to do this?
Yeah, when we were talking about it, we wanted to get someone who it had strong comedic chops, but was also a great storyteller. And comedy, like horror, is frequently difficult to do in our medium. It can be done and done well. Zeb's really good at it. A bunch of other writers, Fred Van Lente and Archer Armstrong comes to mind, is really good at it. So it can be done, and it can be done well. But there's a line you want to walk if it's too morose or if there's not a kineticism to the panel structure and layout, or character design, and I should say, it can fall flat. But when they designed Santa with this giant belt buckle, I've never seen it before. Just all this goofy stuff going on. That's just in David's head. That logo he designed, he colored this cover himself as well. It's a lot of fun. It's really smart. So I think this one's going to be special.
Yeah. I'm really excited for this, as well, but kind of leads me to, my next question. We went through these titles, and we're rattling off names of these creative teams. And these are people that are at the top of their game. And we kind of saw this at Valiant on the other side of the coin, where you guys would often discover creators that maybe a lot of fans of the mainstream, the big two, hadn't heard of, and then it felt like they'd get poached before we knew it. Then they were on Batman or on Spider-Man or what have you. This time it's like you guys are really getting some of the best creators in the industry. Are they hearing about Bad Idea and coming to you, hey, we have this great idea, we've heard about the creative freedom? Are you reaching out through your connections? Is it a bit of both? I know there's so much more to come from Bad Idea, and I have a feeling it's going to be the same thing where it's like, wow, if this creator's
new talent too, man, there's new talent too. We've just announced the first 5 books. We've got a ton in the hopper. We've got a bunch of stuff that we can't tell you about that will go into the books, even the ones we've talked about here. Don't count us out yet in terms of building a couple of new names.
Well, sure. I'm happy to hear that, because I trust you guys. I trust you, Dinesh. I trust you, Warren, when it comes to discovering new talent.
You see that, Hunter and Josh? Not you guys. Fuck you guys. That's the translation.
I discovered Hunter.
That's the that's the tagline of Bad Idea. Fuck you guys.
But has it been a lot of fun to go out and recruit, say,
with what you guys are doing, being able to go to creators and say, hey, you come over, do a project, a bad idea, as many pages as you want, as much real estate as you want, story first. Has it made it easy to get talent of this level?
Well, I think that we've had some good pre-existing relationships with some of the creators, guys like Rob and Matt, we've been able to work with for years and years and years. They were obviously probably two of the key engines that propelled Valiant for years. Rob really on the front half, Matt really on the back half, and of course there were others involved, like you know, we didn't need to go through it all, but guys like Dysart and Fred and whatnot who were key parts of building that. So we have pre-existing relationships with a lot of those guys. Some were creators who I've been trying to work with for years. Marguerite, someone who I reached out to come do some work for us, you know, 3-4 years ago, but her schedule wouldn't allow. Others are artists like Ramon Villalobos, who Josh brought to Valiant. And I don't think we could slot on interiors at that particular point in time, but he had the eye for it and saw that Ramon would be a great addition. So when I got here, you know, a couple of the people that we weren't able to cast for necessarily interiors at Valiant were able to use here. Others are a lot of the contacts that some of the other guys have. Dinesh has a good Rolodex out west, and there are a bunch of creators that will be coming in through that Rolodex. And then, you know, there are people like Zed or Lapham who I was able to work with at Marvel. So it's really a team effort across the board. It's a hodgepodge of just trying to figure out, you know, where who might be good on a particular book. Are they available? But it's a constant for everyone who says yes. There are probably 25 people who are not available, but the thing that we've always done, and I think we've done well, is we haven't necessarily tried to target, you know, the top one or two writers in the industry and try to beg, borrow, and steal to get them here. We just want to build good stories with people we like working with and try to build as broad a range of stories as possible, at least from my end of it.
They're also our friends now, Chase. You got to understand, we worked with a lot of these people. So like Rob and Josh are texting about the script that came in, which is buds, man.
Yeah.
It's also just a bunch of friends working together, and that can often create, you know, really creative environments.
Yeah. You guys are putting a really positive spin on this. It's just classic blackmail, Jace. We spent 10 years at Valiant building a really thick file, and now it's time to call all that in. You know what I'm saying?
No, 100%. Hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Watch yourself, by the way. You were at a lot of poker games. You didn't slip by our radar either, so we might call in a favor or two down the line. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sure there are some incriminating pictures floating around out there on some
Indeed.
After having one too many drinks. We talked a little bit about you know, making sure to stay on a schedule that can foster the best sort of work, you know, not pushing people to do too much. There's got to be a flip side to that when you have so many great creators and things in the hopper, as Dinesh said. You know, you guys have an excitement. You want to get this stuff out there. Is that a challenge to make sure not to do too much when you've got all this great stuff ready for to be seen, basically?
This first wave, I think, is a beast, but the second wave, like what we have it prepped and ready to go. It's just nuclear bombed, just on the plane, getting ready to take off. I mean, we've got just what we have in development right now. The books, it was difficult to select just five. And even then, that number increased and decreased kind of as we went along the way. But what we have coming down the pipeline is, I think it's pound for pound on par with anything in the industry. And for a little company like ours, you know, I think that's, it's something where it's very similar to I think what we tried to do at Valiant, which is just story first, build slowly, don't rush. We don't need five pages a week. If someone needs to take, you know, 3 months to draw an issue, that's cool with us. You know, we'll slot into the schedule. So we don't have the same pressures, the same quarterly pressures that a company like Disney or Time Warner or AT&T now have. We're not a gigantic conglomerate. We're not owned by a company that has absolutely no idea what they're doing with the characters that they've inherited. So along the way, it's, you know, you can carve out these little spots and hopefully just continue to put out good content. And that's, I think, at least for me, the North Star.
Yeah, and I suppose there's probably some thinking that, hey, let's make a big splash and get people really excited with the first wave. But you want to be sure to be able to follow that up, right? Like we've seen small publishers come along before. They have that initial push and that initial capture everybody's
No, then, we're not worried about that at all. Do we haven't even mentioned Josh Dysart. Book's done. Sitting there. It's not in wave one. Heartbreaking. Megalith, the Louis Rosa pages that we've been showing off for a year now. I mean, those things are maybe the best interiors that haven't been published in comics right now. Eric Heiser. We haven't even talked about Eric. Jeff Lemire. We haven't even talked about Jeff. We have so much coming, man. And to your question, yeah, creep is a real problem. You know, we are a group of people who come up with a lot of ideas that get ourselves excited. This crew is a really smart crew, and it's constantly a, well, hold on. We're meant to be a small thing now. We're not doing the big thing.
Yeah, you want to last slow and steady as opposed to a big splash.
Well, it's also, we don't want to kill ourselves. It really is the hard job to do it the way we did it before. Sorry, Hunter, you were saying?
No, sorry to talk over you. The comics does have a proclivity to lean into more. It's like comics' only problem, one of comics' only solution to you guys like comics, more comics. And our philosophy has always been quality over quantity, and like make sure that each unit that we deliver out there, each unit of comics that we dispense, and I think this applied to us at Valiant, but I think is 10 times as true at Bad Idea, each unit of comics that we're asking you to go out there and, you know, go to a store, get in a car, get in a store, put your money on the counter and pay for, like, looks and feels special. And I feel like not only is that specialness incredibly hard to do in the way that Dinesh and Warren like to work, like it takes a lot of work to get that special threshold up, but you know, it also you want to keep it to a cap. I mean, we've put a cap of ourselves of 2 books per month. You know, that's a self-imposed rule, like all the other self-imposed rules that we have at Bad Idea. But hopefully that makes our books have an intangible specialness a little bit. We'd like to get a little bit of an electric tingle in the back of your neck every time you see one, you know, a new Bad Idea book in the store. So, you know, that's all part of the thing we're hoping to achieve.
But hold on. But Hunter's saying, like, Dinesh and Warren, we play this game a little bit, and you play it too, Jason. Which is like, okay, there's certain titles and people do those jobs. It's not true, man. Hunter and Josh and Adam have come up with a ton of story ideas, a ton of notes. Even with the creators, it's very collaborative, right? Sometimes the basic concept comes from our end. Sometimes it comes from their end. Sometimes the story is broken on our end. Sometimes it's broken on their end. It's constantly in flux. And simultaneously, I mean, Rob Venditti might have come up with more marketing ideas for Bad Idea than anybody. I mean, he's constantly creating. That doesn't mean they're good. Rob, I want you to know this. They're bad. They're all bad. But it is a very free-flowing, collaborative environment, and I think that's the difference.
Just to piggyback on that, it really, dating back from Valiant, I started Valiant, I believe, as the first intern, then became the first assistant editor, and then ended up in marketing. But Dinesh Warren created an atmosphere where even I was in digital marketing, I never felt I couldn't walk in and say, I have a note on a comic, or, you know, have read a pitch or suggest somebody, go to a con and see some artwork and suggest somebody. I think they brought a lot of that culture here. And just like Dinesh said, we have creators who are integral and super important to our marketing. Just as, you know, we are all, you know, very invested in creating the best stories possible. So everyone's all hands on deck all the time. And it's a treat to work for a company like that. Well, and it's unique, frankly.
Well, one of the things that I think you guys
Josh. Don't fucking forget it.
One of the things I think you guys are really good about, I mean, you know that I used to run my own kitchen. I used to be a chef.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I would not tolerate from anybody who worked for me was anybody ever saying, if I asked them to do something and they'd said that, well, that's not my job. You know, if you're, you know, my garmanger to make desserts and I ask you to come here and make a salad, well, that's not my job. And I think you guys buy into that, right? Like,
and no one's ever said, like, I can't think of a certain ever where anyone said that.
You're all out. You're all, you know, pulling in the same direction. You're all out for the same goal. Let's make the absolute best comic books that we can, because we all love comic books. You know, we're fans first. And so, you know, if you need help on marketing or you know, somebody like Josh who says, hey, here's a note that, you know, maybe as a comic fan, somebody else is going to think. And so I'm going to bring that to your guys' attention and maybe we can adjust something. So I'm not surprised to hear that. And I think it. Again,
also historically, within our medium, the way to really destroy your company or your career as fast as possible is to just realize that you figured it all out and you don't need to hear from anyone. Like, as soon as you get to that point in time, it's just, it's the kiss of death.
Yeah.
So the only job to be ashamed of is a job poorly done, as it were. So, you know, the collaborative environment, I think, has always been one of the keys to our success, and will continue to be so. And as soon as you have someone at the top who's saying, you know, this is what has to be done, this has to be our next book, this story beat doesn't work, change it, to, you know, reach out to the writer and have them change, you know, once you have this top-down thinking, it's a disaster. So that's something that we definitely try to avoid at all points in time.
Yeah. Well, I really want to thank you guys for your time. It's been a blast to see how excited you all are about this first wave of books that's coming down the line. Are you going to kind of wait and see how things go? Because, you know, as we know, in this industry, things can change quickly. Challenges can crop up, and you're not sure. You have to shift on the fly. Do you know when the second wave of announcements is going to come down? Do you have an idea, or are you kind of wait and see?
Just announced 5 books yesterday, Jace.
I know, and I don't. Again, I'm not pushing you guys, but I'm just.
I haven't even seen my kids yet. Give me some peace.
Hey, you said it yourself. Us comic fans, we always want more, more, more. So.
Jace, there are two first appearances, two more first appearances in the Hero Trade #1 outside of the characters in the Hero Trade. Did you know that? That's how far ahead we are. That's our planning. One is Tankers.
Yep.
Something no one's talked about yet. If you take a look at the Hero Trade, there's a little pinup in the back, and it's one of those mechs fighting a bunch of dinosaurs. So that's in there. That's Hero Trade #1. And there's one more in addition to that. So yeah, we know where we're going.
Fair enough. Well, again, thank you guys so much for your time. I'll throw it out to anybody who has anything they want to add, anything they want to be sure that our listeners are aware of when it comes to Bad Idea.
Thanks, man.
Did my name pun suck? I worked hard on it, and now I'm like having
doubts. I loved it.
Is it good? Is it any good?
Wonderful.
Perfect, man. I have to talk about it at the Friday meeting, Josh. So.
it's interesting.
Is it? It's not for you, but you're glad others might like it.
No, just thank you so much, Jace. Always a real pleasure to talk to you. We're an open book. Anytime you want to chat in the future, just give us a shout. And I certainly relish the opportunity to chat with you anytime, my friend.
Yeah, it's great to see you guys, too. I hope everybody's staying safe. And, you know, hopefully when the world opens back up, it's been far too long since I can't even remember the last time I saw Josh in person.
Jace, get those get ready for cooking and poker in 2022, 2023. We'll figure it out, dude, all right?
Hey, I'm ready, man, definitely. Cook up some good food.
You've given up on 2021 already? Wait, Warren, do you just give up on 2021 right there?
July 2021. It's a little ambitious, bro. Maybe a little ambitious.
Yeah, who knows? So you guys know how in elevators, they often don't have a 13th floor, just skips from 12 to 14?
Yeah.
Once we finally are done with 2020, I advocate we do that with 2020. We just forget it existed. Go from 2019 directly to 2021.
From the record, it's a good call. I like it.
Forget it, man. So, all right. Any last thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, I just throw out one last thing. I throw out if you haven't had a chance to read the Hero Trade yet, we'll be reprinting it in the back of ENIAC #3 too.
Yeah, fantastic. And where's the best place to follow along? Bad Idea. They want to find a list of. The retailers that you're partnered up with, social media, where should everybody go?
Yeah, please follow us at Bad Idea Hello for Instagram and Twitter. There's a fantastic community that's grown on Facebook, Bad Idea Fans, I'm a big fan of checking out. Anyone who's interested, please go and check them out. And then, of course, you can always access where your nearest Bad Idea destination store and even pre-order the books at whereisbadidea.com.
All right, everybody, and I'll put links to the social media and the website in the show notes so you can go there and find everybody. So, again, guys, thanks so much for your time. Great to see everybody, and can't wait to check the books out.
Thank you so much, Jace. Always good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, guys.
Be safe, everybody.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.